The views expressed in our episode are ours alone and do not represent any other organizations. Our episodes discuss internet crimes against children and cases that involve the exploitation of children and may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Yeah, we don't want to do anything to scare your children. That's the last thing we want to do. We don't want to scare anybody.
Well, hello, everybody. My name is Tony Godwin, and I'm flying solo today. I've decided I'm going to try to get a podcast or two knocked out because we have been a few minutes since we've posted. Things at work have been pretty crazy, both for me and for Brandon. And I have received a significant amount of, I won't call it hate mail, but I would call it inquiring mail. Mail from folks, email I'm referring to, that have asked, hey, what's up? Where you at? Where you guys been? How come you're not recording? The short answer is, you know what the short answer is, the work life takes over. And at the end of the day, we, you know, that's our priority first because that's who pays us. So this tends to take a back seat when that happens. We've been doing a bunch of traveling. We're actually traveling again next week, or this coming week rather, to California to teach another class. No, we're not returning to Calexico. We're actually going to another part of the state with a whole different group and try to get them spun up. And so for the most part, we have a bunch of things in the works. There's some really, really super cool things that are right on the horizon of happening. I don't think I'm at liberty to be able to say anything about it yet. It is a super cool opportunity that has come up and we're going to jump off the ledge and see what happens, see how it goes. So hopefully I'll be able to make an announcement here in the future about that so that you'll have something to look forward to. A couple shout outs I think are worth mentioning is don't forget that we do have a Patreon page. We don't push it very much. We don't discuss it all too often, and we probably should. We are very grateful, very, very, very grateful to the Patreon supporters that we do have. We do have three levels or three tiers, I guess. I think it's $3, $5, $15 or $3, $8, $15, something like that. And essentially what that does is allows us to keep doing these. It helps cover, you know, hosting fees and that kind of stuff. And, you know, at the end of the day, we love the listeners that we have. We love the Patreon supporters that we know have stuck through us through thick and thin. We need to do better, and we're going to try to do better as we move forward. So if you have an interest in that, go check it out. You can get extra stuff that comes out there. We do early release on episodes. The episode that I'm going to talk about today, I do have kind of a cool thing that I'm going to be putting out there for just our Patreon listeners related to this specific case, something a little bit different that might add a little bit to the actual case study itself. So if you have the interest, go there. We also have merch. We get asked about that quite a bit. If you hit up our website, www.catfishcops.com, and just hit the merch tab, you'll see it takes you to a link. We actually go through a company that does this for us, but it links directly to all of our stuff, and you can really get like anything that you want, all kinds of stuff, cups and mugs and shirts and like mouse pads, or I mean just about anything you can think of you could outfit with the Catfish Cops logo if you are so inclined, and we are very appreciative if you do advantage of that. What else do we have going on? The 2024 Crimes Against Children Conference, we are back on as a sponsor table again this year. We are super pumped, super excited. Last year was like pretty tremendous. We talked to a ton of people, I'm sure, based on some of the comments that we got. You know, from that, a lot of people were like, hey, we love the interviews. We love hearing about the other things, but when are you going to do some more case studies? And so we do understand that, but we also understand that we want to highlight the really good work that we know goes on around the country, and that there are, you know, ICAC professionals, men and women out here doing this job, just like we are, having tremendous success. And so we really appreciate being able to highlight some of that when we have the opportunity to meet up with them, especially at the conference. It's a great opportunity to network, see people that we haven't seen in a year, sometimes new folks we've never met. and just build on those relationships. So we're pretty pumped and pretty excited about that. I also want to give a quick plug to the National Law Enforcement Officer Hall of Fame, Megan Stockberger and Adam Davenport. I'm going to make an effort to get them on here pretty quick, even though I don't think it will happen before the 2024 induction ceremony, which takes place literally in a week, March 22nd of 2024 in the great state of Texas. They are here at Fort Worth at the Omni Hotel on the 22nd, and that's where this year's inductees will be inducted into the Hall of Fame. A lot of people were submitted. Just a few are able to get in this year, but it's going to be a really tremendous ceremony. I will be attending this year. I think as a, I guess like an alum, I get to go back no matter what, but it's really important to me now. I've kind of tried to take a 10,000 foot view of it because it's super humbling to be able to be in a situation or a position when, where I can say, you know, yeah, that's, I'm there, I'm in that. And that's a huge accomplishment. Not so much all of what am I doing? And I just think I'm surrounded with a great team of good people who, you know, allow me to do a lot of really cool things. I'm super appreciative of that. And so at the end of the day, I feel compelled, I guess, or interested in paying that forward. I want to see that that organization grows and just gets humongous. I would love to be able to, you know, play a small role in getting them. Ultimately, the ultimate goal is to find a location, you know, find a spot to put a building or buy a building or build a building or rent a building or whatever, where they can actually have a location for the National Law Enforcement Officer Hall of Fame, where people can come in and visit and read about the stories and hear things and see things and just recognize all of the great work I know happens around the country. And I know the majority of you know that, but it's no easy task. I will say the ceremony itself is a huge undertaking. Megan and Adam do a tremendous job. They do it by themselves, basically, and they work hard all year. They don't take money for this. They just invest and they're passionate about it to see this grow. And it has grown exponentially from the beginning, but it's important that we push the word and we let people know that it is out there. Whoa, as you can probably hear, a ginormous clap of thunder. It's storming like crazy here today as I record this. So sorry for the interruption, but you know, at the end of the day, I think for the National Law Enforcement Officer Hall of Fame, it's kind of a three-tiered approach in my eyes. You know, one is do what needs to be done to raise enough money for the induction ceremony being held next week, because it is a lot of money to put this on. They have a really cool thing. If you go to the website for the National Law Enforcement Officer Hall of Fame, you can see that they have a really cool raffle that they're doing right now. There's a real special edition Henry rifle that's available. Raffle tickets are $25, and the grand scheme of things is not much at all. If you're interested, please get over there to the website. You can look at my social media post. I just put a QR code out about it. You can hit the QR code and see a spot where you can get your raffle ticket or two for a chance to win that rifle. It's really cool. It looks really cool. It's a real special edition for law enforcement. So hit them up. The second tier in my eyes for fame, the National Hall of Fame, would be next year's ceremony. Next year's induction ceremony in 2025 is also going to be held in Fort Worth at the Omni. And so now's the time for us to get kicking, try to get some steady sponsors, some, you know, steady donors. If you're a business owner and you are supportive of law enforcement, I can think of nothing better than to see that your money goes to a good cause, allows these induction ceremonies to continue. And then the third phase, obviously, I already mentioned, would be let's get them a building. Let's make this, you know, let's try to get Texas as the home base for where this is located. Bring people from all over the world here to be able to enjoy it. But that would be no easy feat by itself, because it will be such a huge undertaking. So that's what I got to say about all that. If I can give a shout out to them, and as the thunder claps again, the thunder rolls, I'm going to move on. I'm going to talk about this case study today, see if I can get through this, hopefully get something out of it. So this is a 2020 case, which isn't obviously all that long ago. This happened, started kind of around January of 2020. The sort of randomly generated name that we've given for this individual today, his name is Henry Doyle. In January of 2020, and I know we've mentioned this in the past with other episodes, but we don't really talk about it too much, but we have discussed a few times about takeover accounts. And historically, while we kind of really limit the number of those that we do, and there's a bunch of reasons for that, a lot of things that become really difficult for us. And one of the twists with this particular case is this actually was a case that involved an adult complainant. And now, if this is your first time listening and you've never heard what Catfish Cops is about, we work child exploitation, anything that involves kids, you know, cell phones, computers, gaming systems, the World Wide Web, and children. Historically, the only aspect of adults that we deal with are adult offenders. And so we don't necessarily get a lot of cases where our initial complainant is an adult. That's usually handled by someone else on the adult side. But for this case, this was brought to my attention. This was an adult victim who came forward, basically was referred to my agency from another agency. That's how it all sort of kind of taken off as this began. And so what basically took place is this adult female was online on a platform, and she had been communicating with a person, messaging through the application. Things looked promising, I guess. They were encouraging for both of them. And at the end of the day, they decided to move to a different platform, move to another way to begin to speak. That transition happened. There was obviously, you know, exchange of photographs and things like that. You know, basically they decided, yeah, we want to keep going and talk a little bit more. And so everything in the beginning seemed very normal and ordinary and, you know, people just trying to get to know each other. Within a short amount of time, there was some things that took place where this victim, this female victim, and I'll just call her the complainant, where this complainant found out about some information that was shared by this person. She wasn't anticipating this at all. Like, it kind of shook her to the core, so to speak. As this person, you know, revealed some information, the conversation took a spin that moved into the arena of child exploitation. While the complainant was very concerned, was very worried, was very taken back by what this person was saying, very confused. Why does this come up? You know, this is an adult platform with two consenting adults. How is it that this has taken a turn the way it did? And so at the end of the day, she decided in her own mind, because she was communicating also with a family member, to say, like, okay, this seems weird. Like, this person is talking crazy about doing things with children, and I don't really know why they felt the need to bring this up. What should I do? Should I just, you know, basically ghost the person? Should I just block the person? And through some communications on another device with a family member, she was encouraged, well, you should try to get as much info as you can for the cops and then make a report. You know, maybe they can figure out if he's actually hurting somebody or done something like that. So at the end of the day, that's what she chose to do. She opted to continue with a very uncomfortable conversation. She pretended to act very interested in what this person was offering up and communicating that he had been doing with kids. And so she just treated it as a way to gather as much information, relay it to the police. What started the conversation that took a little weird twist was that this individual told her that at the age of 9, he had sex with his stepmother, who pretended that she was asleep at the time, but that she was not asleep. And so, you know, of course, as a normal adult doing normal things, just trying to communicate and make friends and whatnot, you know, this was very, very odd. Like, what in the world? Why would someone use this as an opener? And all of this, keep in mind, took place over a period of like, 15, 20 minutes of communicating through this app. And then as they transitioned to another platform. So she was a bit shocked. As she sort of continued, this individual, he made some other claims. He made some claims that he had physically, sexually abused and raped a 9-year-old child and an 11-year-old child. And he was bragging at the, you know, kind of in a braggadocious kind of way with this complainant. Again, she was sickened. She was disturbed. She was angry about all of these things that this guy was saying, and also getting more communications from her family members saying, you know, get what you need to get, try to record things, take screenshots, do all these things to, you know, get the information so we can get it to the police. And this guy just kind of continued, you know, professing to her that he loved kids in the age range between 10 and 14, how sexy they were, and that he made a claim that he was currently in a relationship where he was able to train, and that's the word that he used, train a 9-year-old. And he was trying to train the 9-year-old to perform sex acts, very deviant sex acts, and that the parents of this child were allowing this to happen. Now, I know we've talked in the past, you know, those are what we typically call charm school cases, where we have parents who are offering up their own children or their stepkids or children they have access to for sexual acts with people. Very disturbing to even consider that something like that can happen. But trust me, we can tell you firsthand that this does happen all the time. And so while this complainant who's on the line with this guy is communicating, you know, this is news to her that is just rocking her world. You know, this is not something she's ever heard of. Absolutely sickened by what she's hearing. She's getting more and more angry. She's, you know, telling her family member, you know, through this other device that she didn't think she can keep talking to this person. Like, she just wants to throw up. All of the things that you would expect. There were some communications that continued. The family member was encouraging her to just try to get as much information, kind of tough through this. You know, you're doing the right thing. You're going to turn this all over to the police. And so one of the things that one part of the conversation that came up and took place was that the complainant mentioned that she had a niece in the same age range as this guy was indicating, you know, that he had an interest in. Once she offered that information up, and I don't think that the information was true. I think she was basically trying to keep the communications going at that point. And at the end of the day, it worked because very, very, very interested at that time. And they continued to talk, right? And so once the communications started to revolve around the complainant and her 9-year-old niece is when things really took kind of a crazy turn, and all of the things he was saying he wanted to do to the child, not to the complainant, but to the child. It was very specific that his sexual interest and deviance was towards the kid alone and not towards the victim or the complainant. So at the end of the day with this, and this has taken place now again over a period of 35, 45 minutes, maybe close to an hour. And so she's trying to figure out a way to get out of the conversation. And at one point is asking like, hey, I'd like to actually speak to you. Like, I want to hear your voice. I want to hear your voice on the phone. And so he requested a phone call. Like, would I be able to call you and talk to you? Now, in the context of things and cases that we've covered in the past, that is not uncommon. We have, unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of people that are online and they are doing things that are crazy and purporting to be something that they're not. And so a lot of times when you connect with some offender, they want validation. And clearly in this situation, this is what was looking for, was some sort of validation that kind of thrown all this stuff out there. And so now at the end of the day, I want to make sure that I am actually talking to who they claim to be. Now, one weird little aspect of this, if this isn't already weird, is Doyle is the second person that she communicated with. And what I mean by that is this person that she originally connected with on the third party app and saw the guy's profile had probably 20 or 25, 30 pictures, different pictures. So it looked legit. Obviously there was some initial attraction to the person in the photos, but he purported to be somebody else. He purported to be a guy named David. And so David is not discussing anything with the child yet. He's more interested in the complainant. But when the topic of kids do come up, he starts referencing his best friend, Doyle. And he's like, oh yeah, you know, I didn't know if I should bring this up, but you know, I have a really close friend and he's into this kind of stuff. And I might be interested in it, but I'm not really sure, but you would really like him. And I think he would really like you. And so when I heard the story initially, when this was first brought to my attention, I called bullshit, like right off the bat. I was like, this is one person posing as two people. I mean, that's what it sounded like to me. Like, based on my time and my experience of doing these, I've seen that many, many, many times. You know, at the end of the day, this complainant, this person really believed that she had communicated with two different people. Now, the communications got weird, and yes, it started talking about kids. And then David made the intro to Doyle, and because they had switched platforms, she was communicating on two different platforms with what she believed to be two different people. Doyle character, who was making claims that he was actively sexually abusing a child, wanted the voice call. He was the one that wanted the voice call, not David, the first guy. And so a phone call happens, and she was able to actually record the phone call. I have it here. I'm going to read it. I've typed it out because it wasn't a very long call. And again, she was trying to gather information so that she could get off the phone, call the cops, make a report, and give everything that she had to them. So the following here is a phone conversation between Doyle and my female complainant. Doyle says, David says you're pretty hot. I guess he's making reference to the photos that she had on her profile and the photos he had on his. He's like, yeah, this is totally new to me. All that he's talking about, and this is going to be really different. And you could just tell in her voice as you listen to the call that it's like very nervous laughter and like she's unsure. You can just tell that she's very uncomfortable. And Doyle responds, he's like, oh, I love your voice. God, you have a great phone voice. Which, again, this is a validation thing. This is one of those deals where he just needed confirmation that, yeah, I actually am talking to a female and not some guy pretending to be a female. And she just giggles and laughs as a as a reply. He said, so it sounds like you're kind of interested in what I was talking about. And she said, well, it's very new to me. She said, it's interesting, but yeah, it's different. I just don't really know. That's her reply. He says, yeah. He goes, but you want to be trained to do this to kids, don't you? She just giggles and she's like, yeah, I think, you know, something like that. And he's like, oh, I really like that. He's like, now that really turns me on. And he said, I like seeing your video. Now, what he's referencing is on the original profile that she had, it's a normal social media profile. So she had pictures and a couple videos up there. He's talking about one of the videos that she had posted. And she says, well, hey, thank you for that. And he goes, you like younger guys. Now, what that really references is, again, this complaint, it keep in mind, is in her, I don't know, probably 40s. And so younger in her eyes is obviously still an adult, but maybe somebody in their 30s or their late 20s or whatever. So it doesn't really take on the context of younger, like underage, like someone we would normally think about. Whereas this offender Doyle, he's already acknowledged that he's into as young as 9, even younger than that, and that he's been active with real kids. So the context of that is, and her, again, her replies are just giggles and laughs because she really doesn't know what to say. Again, so now Doyle says, so do you think that you're ready to be trained to do this with your niece? He said, do you think you're ready? And she just replies, maybe. And he says, well, you have a very nice, sexy little baby girl voice. And she just giggles and says, I guess. And he said, have you been told how young you sound? And she says, no. And then you hear a beep in the call. You hear a beep. And for the old school folks who don't know, that's like your another call's coming in, right? So when you're on the phone with somebody, and you know, young people today have no concept of that because they don't talk on the phone, but it beeps. So, you know, hey, I got a call coming in. So she even says, she's like, hey, could you hold on? I got a call coming in. I need to take it and I'll come right back. And so he says, sure. Yeah, no problem. Well, then she clicks over and it's her relative saying, hey, here's the number to the agency you need to talk to about this. And so she just disconnects the call, right? She's not going back to talk to him. And the call basically ends. And so what takes place at that point is she gets on the phone with a law enforcement agency here in North Texas to say, hey, look, this is what's going on. Here's the call that I just had. Here's the communications I have. Here's the conversation that this guy had, or these two guys had. And this is what they're talking about. And I have screenshots and I have this, I have that. I recorded the phone call. What do I do? Now, one of the kickers is that she does not live in Texas. My complainant lives in another state just to the east of Texas. Basically, the agency here in Texas says, well, look, you live in Louisiana, so you need to report it to the Louisiana cops because that's where you live. And so she disconnects and essentially calls the local agency in her area. And that local agency is like, well, wait a minute, where is the guy that you were talking to? And she said, well, he's in Texas. Basically, that agency in Louisiana says, well, no, you need to call Texas because your offender lives over there. And so this, unfortunately, is a common thing that happens. Usually we see it internally to Texas. We see situations where people are trying to make a police report to their local agency, and maybe one of the parties lives in another city. And so there's this back and forth, right? They probably spend more time talking their way out of a report than just having to actually do the report. And so, unfortunately, that's the sad side of things that take place internally amongst police departments. To me, it's just lazy. Just take a report. That's what people expect. Clearly, this woman has some information that is pretty vital. And so she gets frustrated. She ends up calling back to Texas to this other agency and is like, hey, they're not going to do anything. They said I have to do it with you guys because the guy that I communicated with claims to live in your city. And so that agency does the right thing. They take a police report from her. They indicate to her like, hey, we need to get these files. We need to get this information. And she said, well, I'm getting in the car and I'm driving this to you. I have it all on a thumb drive. I'm going to bring you my device. You know, if you need to look at that, like, I'm on my way. And she said, I'll be there in several hours, but I'm on my way. And that's what she does. She basically drives from Louisiana to Texas, and she drives to this agency. Now, mind you, this started very early in the morning, you know, midnight or after midnight. This is how disturbed she was by the communications. She was very, very upset about everything. She was very concerned that maybe either of these guys or the one specific Doyle did have access to a child. And so that was a huge concern. And so she's like, I'm going to do the right thing. So she does, drives over to that station, basically turns over a thumb drive full of what she calls her evidence. That's what happens. And then she goes about her business. She does have family that lives in Texas, so she's familiar with where to go and things like that. So she goes to stay with family for a couple days in case the police need to speak to her. That agency takes the report, files the thumb drive that she brought as evidence. That's where it goes, right? That happens on like a Friday night, Saturday night, something like that. Over the weekend, on Monday, when I come into work, I get a phone call from a detective at that other agency who says, hey, let me tell you about this story. And tells me this story that I just relayed to you. And like, oh, by the way, we think the person that she was communicating with lives in your city. And I'm like, okay. I was like, well, can you get me the information? Can you send it to me? And so they basically tell me, yeah, sure, no problem. We'll send you what we got. They sent the police report, sent me a link, an encrypted link to be able to download all of the information that was shared from the thumb drive. And then I'm off to the races. So I get that information. Essentially, the person, Doyle, who to me is the main sort of target. There are two people that I'm looking at, obviously, because it started with this guy, David, and then it moved to this guy, Henry Doyle. I also communicate with my complainant at that time. And so I'm able to find some information. I'm able to kick off some legal process, obviously very common things that we do. And I positively identify Doyle through a bunch of the legal process. Now, I was able to narrow down some information on the first subject, David. Nothing really concrete. There was a person living in my city by that name, but I could not find any sort of communication any sort of link between the first guy, David, and this guy, Doyle. And so I was very confused. Again, my gut was telling me it's one guy posing as two to maybe make himself look valid or legit or something. Like it just didn't make sense to me, but that's kind of what my gut was feeling. But everything on paper was looking like there was actually two people. And so I was able to then recover some information. Basically, between February and May, I found all kinds of stuff, a bunch of different chats. I found a couple of different profiles. I think I found almost 1,200 chats in 1 month. I found 500 plus in March. There was about 1,200 chats in February. There was about 500 plus chats in March, a couple of hundred in April. There was almost about 100 in May. And then when I looked at messaging and whatnot, now this is all based on information that was shared with my original complainant, with my female complainant. There was a bunch there was probably about 1,400 regular, what we call SMS, MMS messages, just text messaging between phones from David. And there was about 700 to 800 between the Doyle guy and my complainant. So everything like looking again, like it was two people, which was a little confusing because I could not find any connect between the two. Anyway, so I had to kind of keep moving on. My primary focus obviously is going to be this Henry Doyle guy. Because why? Because he said, hey, I've got access to a 9-year-old kid and I'm training this kid for deviant sexual acts. That's no bueno. And so we want to make sure that we're moving as quickly as we possibly can. Can I confirm that this guy does have access to a kid? If so, we're going to pull the trigger really quick. But I did not find that he actually had access to a child. Nothing would give me any indication that that was the case. I did some surveillance, watched some people coming and going, but I never saw a kid. And so this sort of dragged into a time frame of, you know, legal process takes a little bit of time. But, you know, at the end of the day, this kind of dragged into a couple of months back and forth with more information. Now, there was a bunch of statements that I was able to recover from some accounts. Some of this is really, really super graphic. Some of this is really disturbing. I'm going to read through a few of these so that you have some clue, some concept. If you got kids in the car, turn this off, come back to it later. This is not a kid-friendly episode. Most of ours are not. But at the end of the day, I don't do these, and Brandon's talked about this in the past, like we don't do this for the shock and awe factor. We literally read to you the words that these people say, because you have to take into context their mindset, their posture, their presence, their demeanor. This is what they have the desire to do. And yes, it's disturbing. Yes, it's disgusting. Yes, it should make you angry and upset, because it makes us angry and upset too. But these are some of the communications that took place between Doyle and with my original complainant. He says, he's referencing we being he and David, his buddy, we want to fuck her. Even at the age of 9, she can fuck, don't you think? And the 9-year-old they're referring to isn't the one that he claims he already has access to. It's the victim's niece, her made up 9-year-old niece who doesn't even exist. But she did that to get more information. So he's like, hey, but we do want to have sex with her. And then he says, can't you picture her opening up her legs, rubbing my cock on her as I take her and then I kiss her on the mouth? Very disgusting, very disturbed. There's more conversation that he has about things that he wants to have done, oral things that he wants done. This is not a situation where he's like, I want you to do this. He's like, I want this 9-year-old to do this. And this desire that he has to sexually abuse a child is exactly what it is. He talks about his junk and how big it is, all these sort of things. I'm not going to read anymore. I know Brandon would give me a bunch of crap for that because I make him do it a lot, but really, really disturbing, really some of the most deviant stuff you could ever hear. So now this sort of moves forward. I'm into, I think, about March, April timeframe. It goes into sort of May of 2020. And I have a bunch of legal process that comes out. Obviously, because there was a phone call between Doyle and my complaining victim, obviously we're chasing numbers, right? We're chasing phone numbers and things like that. We're chasing online accounts because we want to get this person identified. That's an easy way for us to do that. Now, some of the information turned out to be what we call voiceover IP, a VoIP number, right? So it's a fake number that you can get. You don't have to cough up your own real number. But when you set those accounts up, there was information that could be helpful to us that we can trace back and drill back to an actual house. And so I obviously had legal process kicked off for the phone number I knew for this original dude named David and then this secondary dude named Doyle. Much to my surprise, as I had mentioned earlier, it was determined that both of those accounts were created at the same location, right? From the same place, the same IP. Now, that doesn't mean that it couldn't be two people still, but my gut tells me and told me that this is probably just one guy posing as two different people. And so that's kind of the way I proceeded from there. So there was a message that was recovered. My complainant was very cooperative. She was very accommodating. She wrote everything out in a sworn statement for me, very, very detailed, multiple pages long. She cooperated by allowing her device to be examined forensically to pull information for court purposes so that everything was done and on the up and up. She generally was very concerned, you know, that this guy really had access to a kid. And so, you know, we kind of went from there to get things moving forward. This turned into, and I know I mentioned it at the very beginning, and we don't talk in great depth about his takeover accounts, but this was an opportunity for me to work with a consenting adult to do a takeover account. It's less risk for me to do that involving an adult's account because when we deal with takeover of kids' accounts, there's a bunch of things that we have to take into consideration. One of which is the child being as forthcoming with us as we hope? Are they telling us every time they've communicated? Have they spoken on the phone? Have they heard each other's voice? Are there things that have been talked about and discussed that they're too embarrassed to talk about with me? And so it really puts us in a predicament where we could get burned pretty quick doing a takeover. But with an adult, I mean, she came forward with all this information. She was very forthcoming. She was very open, very honest. There was no reason for me not to try to do a takeover to keep this going, right? And so that's what I did. She provided her permission for me to do that. I took over her account. Then I made communications with him with both profiles, posing as her. And I said, I'm not sure if you got my message or not, but I'm going to be dog sitting for a girlfriend in the area around. I named the city. I'm planning to keep my niece overnight on this Friday and Saturday. I'm not sure if you're still interested. If you are, okay. But reach out to me. I haven't heard from you guys. Thanks. And so I sent that to both profiles, right? Both of the people, David and Doyle, to see, you know, what was sort of shaken and go from there. Now, as you can imagine, catching one predator is fantastic. We get that person off the street. Catching two people, if this was going to be two people, is a pretty big deal. And so all the communications that, you know, we were having, obviously was running through a prosecutor. I want to make sure that, you know, everything's on the up and up. I had some communications about how we were going to proceed and the things that we were going to proceed and do. So hit the pause button and come back and tell you how this case comes to a conclusion.
Thank you for listening to the Catfish Cops podcast, brought to you by Brandon Poor and Tony Godwin. For additional information and available resources, please visit our website, www.catfishcops.com, and click on the resources link.